Shalom Aleichem, on behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Baba Basra Kuf Samach Vav, Baba Basra 166. We're going to start on the previous daf. So we're on Kuf Samach Hei Amid Beis. Pagination is 330, where we're going to do the end of the Mishnah as a way of introduction to today's daf. Counting up from the bottom about 10 lines, the Mishnah tells us, Kosev bo milmaila mane o milmata masayim. If a document says 100 in the beginning of the document, the upper part of the document, and on the lower part of the document it says 200, or the reverse, milmaila masayim o milmata mane. It says 200 in the beginning, and it says 100 at the end. So it's, for example, describing a loan, and the loan says that 200 whatever's changed hands, and then later on it says that only 100 changed, and therefore we conclude this document that 100 changed hands. Which one is it? Hakol holich achar hatachton. When you have a contradiction, we follow the later statement, perhaps because we assume that there was a change of heart as the document was being written, and we assume that the end statement is the correct statement. Of course, this is provided that this end statement is not in the last line, because we know that we have a rule that we don't learn from the last line, and we discussed what would happen if it said, HaKol Sharu V'Kayom, but this concept certainly has to be taken into account, that the last line we don't learn from. But if it's earlier than that, it has the binding power of a tachton, and that's what we would follow. Im kein lama kosvin eso elyon. The Mishnah asks almost provocatively, so why is the first number written there at all? Well, one could explain that that's how they thought they were going to do the transaction, and then they ended up finalizing. But what's it there for? Fundamentally, why is it that shtaros are written in such a way that it says it and then it reviews it? Says the Mishnah, Shem Timochekos Achas Menatachton, because if there was a letter that's erased, or perhaps not clear, in the later statement, Yilmad min ho'elyon, you could learn from the upper if it makes sense. If it makes sense that what's missing in the bottom one is explained by the top one, then we're good and we could learn from the top one. An analogy to this, although there may be chilukim differences, but an analogy to this is the way we write checks. We write one statement that, for argument's sake, could be called Elyon, the earlier statement, which is in digits. And then we write it, what might, for argument's sake, be called Tachton, the lower statement, which is writing the number out in words. So if you wrote 200, first you wrote 200, and then you wrote 200, spelling out the words. What would happen if there's a contradiction between the two? So I believe that legally, the words are the dominant, but it could be that if there's a total contradiction, that the check would be considered voided, perhaps. And that's what we're grappling with over here, that you have two statements, and you need to know which one is the binding one. So we're being told that the bottom one is the binding one in a written document, but we can, in certain circumstances, learn from the upper statement. Let's go on to today's daf, which is Kuf Samach Vav 166. We'll do B, which is pagination 332. Second line, Tanu Rabbanan, we learned. Yilmad hatachton mino elyon be'osachas. You can learn the bottom one, which is considered the more definitive statement. You could learn it from the top one if it's just one letter that concerns us. Avalo b'shteyosios, but not if it's two letters. Kigon, this is a case that would work. Chanan mechanani. If in the bottom it only said ches nun nun, and there's a yud missing, and it's erased. We're not positive that it's a yud because it's erased. But earlier in the document, it said chanani, ches nun nun, with a yud. Or similarly, va'anan, in the bottom it says ayin nun nun, and there's something smudged. Drop of water got on it. It's smudged. I can't tell what it says definitively. But earlier in the document, it said, Me'anani, from Ayin Nun Nun Yud. So I have the right on one letter to learn from what's written in the top. It's not like the top of the document is considered fraud. It's just that the top of the document is not as definitive, but it's only a Megale. It's revealing what I just need some evidence somehow to know that it's indeed this person who borrowed or loaned or whatever. So the top wording is considered a verification on what I otherwise just have a hunch might be the correct wording on the bottom. Now the Shach points out that the concern over here and what we're looking to address is not that we would simply take the top word chanani and the bottom word chanan and say, like the Mishnah told me, follow the bottom one, and we would consider the bottom one to be binding. That's not really the case, because there's something very odd over here, because if you notice, as we're reading the Gemara, chanan has a nun at the end, and therefore it's using a final letter, whereas chanani is using two bent letters, two nuns like they're written in the middle of a word. So if you have, at the end of a document, ches nun nun, with both nuns being bent nuns and not final nuns, you're really not in a great position to say that it's the person chanan. And that's why the Shach says it's not really that it was going to be binding with Chanan. It's that we would have thrown it out. We wouldn't be sure who this person is unless we have the word Chanani written in the beginning of the document. And therefore, we were able to extrapolate to make an assumption that that's the letter that's missing. And it makes sense that that's what's missing because it's two bent letters. And it makes sense that it's the yud that's missing. And the same with anan, anani. Same concept. In the case that the Gemara gave, it would have been a final letter. And it does not mean that we simply would have given the money to anan and considered it binding in that way. Okay, let's do another case about 10 lines from the bottom. Amar Rav Papa, starting at the beginning of a line. Pshito li, it's obvious to me, seifel milmaila. If it says the word seifel in the beginning of the document, v'keifel milmato, and it says the word keifel later on, hakol holech achar hatachton, we're going to follow the bottom wording. What is seifel and what is keifel? So in Shulchan Aruch, the way it's presented is that Seifel is a contraction for Sa'ah Upalga, an amount, a Sa'ah and a half. And Keifel is Kav Upalga, Kav and a half. A Kav is much less than a Sa'ah. These are two different measures that are very significantly different. So Rav Papa says, if the larger amount is written in the beginning and the smaller amount is in the end, then I have the rule of the Mishnah, which is very clear to me. I follow the later statement and therefore the lesser number, in our case, is what's going to be binding. It would seem that if it was reversed, and it said K fell in the beginning and Se fell in the end, that we would again follow the later statement. In this case, it would be the more, but that's not of consequence. We follow the later statement. Rav Papa presents a question whether that would be true, not because it's bigger or smaller, but because of the nature of the letters that are being changed, the Samach and the Kuf. Bo'i Rav Papa. Kefel mil milo v'sefel mil mata. Let's say you have the kavu palgo word in the beginning, which is the smaller amount, by the way. V'sefel mil milo and the sa'u palgo word, which, by the way, is the larger amount, later in the document, and by logic we should follow the later statement. My, what's indeed the halacha? Okay, what's the problem? Explains Rav Papa, Michaishinon lezevuv olo. Do we concern ourselves that perhaps a fly or a bug, a smudge, or whatever, came and adjusted the letter? And for this, we have to appreciate what the kuf might look like in their writing, like script, and what their samach would look like. And apparently, Rav Papa was concerned that it could be that just as the top one said kefel, the bottom one also said kefel, but a zavuv, a fly, dipped its legs into the ink while it was wet, smudged it, and it became sefel. And therefore, Rav Papa holds, you should not rely, perhaps, on the word sefel that's later in the document, because maybe it's merely a smudge. And the Gemara says, Teiku, let the question remain. Now, for us, on our level of learning this Gemara, I don't think what's important is the kefel and the sefel and the way the kuf and the samach looked in their particular script. If our script would be different and those two are not interchangeable, the Dayan will look at the letter and see, could it conceivably have been altered in such an innocent type of way? What's important to us is to be aware, and this segues nicely into tomorrow's session, that the Dayan, the judge, has to be paying attention to this document, just as when he cross-examines live witnesses, there's certain things he pays attention to, discrepancies in their presentation. In a written document, there's certain things that he has to be a detective. He has to be paying attention to and notice if something could have been altered. So that in our Gemara, it could be Rav Papa was worried about a kuf and a samach. It could be that our sofrim are so pristine different between kuf and samach that that's not where our big concern is. But wherever the big concern is in your situation, the Dayan has to be paying attention to notice it. Yasher Koach, thank you for joining.